Station number 26584.
Roger Johnson, Reel 7. I think there are aspects to your career, and in particular training in different climates, that you wanted to talk about.
That's right, yes. I worked in the desert. It was 145 degrees Fahrenheit in the shade and the rain, no shade. And I worked in the jungle in Borneo and Malaya, which is another form of warfare. And then I've also done Arctic warfare in a place called Christian Sands, I think it's South Norway. So I went from Limpsden on a, what they call, I think it was a cold, weather warfare course where we learnt to ski. So we were attached, we went to live in the Norwegian barracks. And that was the temperature there was minus 40, and that was, well, it was quite dangerous. So we learnt to ski. We'd go around in a circle in the, on the local village green, and all the little boys and girls, Norwegian boys and girls, you know, age 4 and 5, who were skimming around on skis, couldn't understand, you know, why these grown men, you know, was lumbering around trying to learn to ski. But we did become ski troops eventually. We had to learn pretty quick. And the temperature was, you know, I think minus 40. We would live out, we would lay on brushwood with a bit of canvas over us. How we weren't killed or died of exposure, I don't know. And then later on, we would build igloos with very long knives, chop snow blocks and put them together, build an igloo. So outside it was minus, you know, the 40, and inside it would be sort of zero. So you'd light a candle inside, and the candle would sort of cause the inside of the igloo to slightly thaw a little bit and block up any holes. And then you'd be in seven sleeping bags inside the igloo, and everything was frozen, even inside. You put your boots in your bed, otherwise your boots would be like wooden blocks. You wouldn't get your boots on in the morning. So they had to go into your sleeping bag. Your weapon had to go in your sleeping bag, your food, your drink, everything, anything had to go into your sleeping bag, so it was kept, you know, pliable and workable by the heat of your body. So then we learnt to we learnt snow warfare. We learnt to do section attacks, you know, with German Spies and machine guns streaming around on skis. Of course, we weren't particularly good at skiing, and one of the things that hampered us, that the Norwegians, first of all, they don't go out in minus 40. They have a great big thermometer outside their barrack, their door, and if it goes to minus 40, they go back to bed. But no, minus 40, we go out into the snow because we come from Devon. We know all the answers. So there we are in extreme temperature, and the Norwegian ski soldiers, they take out 20, they carry 20 kilos, which is about 40 pound. Not so the British commandos. We come from Devon. We know all about this. So we're carrying now 80 pounds to wear it out in a temperature which we shouldn't be. We're carrying twice as much on our backs, and we're on skis. So you fall off your skis, you fall down, you can't get up because you've got 80 pound on your back. Then your mate's trying to pick you up, and he falls over because he's got 80 pounds on his back. So it's just a bloody shambles because we won't be told by the Norwegians because we're from England. So we really must change our attitude. And then we would be pulling what they call a pulk, which is a 200-pound sledge. So you've got two commandos tied to a 200-pound sledge, screaming down a mountainside. You know, screaming obscenities, you know, get out of the way, and knocking down trees as they come down the mountainside. It's absolute chaos, but it's great fun. So we learned to become sort of mediocre ski troops and how to live out and plant booby traps and live. And at weekends, I used to make a snow hole about 3 foot thick with a axe, with a pick and a shovel. And like an Eskimo, I'd sit by the snow hole and try and fish. But the point is, I've made so much noise in making the hole, banging the hole through 3 feet of ice, all the fish in the, you know, in the sea had swum away. So I never did catch any fish, but it's a good experience. And we learned to live on cold rations, so you don't need hot food to keep warm. You need food that keeps you warm. So your food can be a lot of the food was in rather like your tube of toothpaste, but it was sauces and creams and cold meat and biscuits, that sort of thing. So a lot of the food was cold. But it was another experience. And then,
Where were you being trained to fight?
well, it was in case the Royal Marines were needed to operate in
Was it the Russians?
the Russian borders, that sort of thing. Yeah, that's what it would have been for. Because in those days, in the 60s, we didn't, our enemy, inverted commas, always had a star on the head here, you see. So it was the third war. It was the third war that didn't happen. It was the Cold War. So all our enemies, you know, were Russian. I mean, I was on a ship once, and we were going over to Sweden, and underneath the ship, the flagship of the Home Fleet HMS Lion, was a submarine, a Russian submarine. And the submarine skipper said to our skipper, "Oh, how long are you going to Sweden for?" And the skipper sent a signal back and said, "Until every man has had shore leave," because they don't get shore leave in the Russian Navy, you see. So you were spotted all the time. You were followed by the Russians. Our enemy, inverted commas, was the Russians, yes. That's why we were doing snow warfare. It's quite an ordeal, because you can, you know, in those sort of temperatures, you can. What you want to do was somebody dropped a tin opener, and we stood round, and we watched this tin opener. We looked at this tin opener on the floor, but nobody had the courage to pick up the tin opener. It was too much effort because it was too cold. So what you want to do is to sit down, and have a little sleep, have a little sleepy poo, and it'll be a long, long sleep because you won't wake up. It's quite an ordeal. It's probably, of the two extremes, in heat and in the cold, I'd probably rather be in the heat. Both can kill you, but I think I'd rather be in the heat, yeah. But you do get the opportunity in the commandos to go to extremes of everything, you know.
What sort of, if we move on from the snow warfare, what sort of kit were you wearing?
Well, in all snow, you wore an oversuit of all white. Now, if you're working amongst trees like there, then all white would show up. So you'd maybe take off your jacket, your white over jacket. So now you're half white and half khaki, half mucky colour, you know. Or some of the troops may keep on their jacket, over jacket, and others take off their white over suits. So you're a mixture now of sort of a grey tree colour and whitey snow colour. So you mix, so you blend. So it's no good being, you know, to be an effective fighting troop. You've got to be not to be seen. So you would adjust your camouflage accordingly. And if you were away from the snow, of course, then you take off your white snowsuit. And as I said, you become a bit of a dab hand at making Eskimo igloos to live out. And some of the fun parts of this, there's a thing called skioring, which years ago used to be done behind a horse, but now it's sort of done. I mean, I'm not up to date now, but it was done behind a snow cat, a weasel. So you have a long rope behind this tracked vehicle, and then you take your ski sticks. And you put the basket end underneath your arm, and you take a turn around the rope with your sticks, and then you lay back, and then you're pulled along. And it could be 20 of you being pulled around on one rope. And if one person falls over, then everybody goes into the back. And if the weasel goes around the corner, then the person on the end of the rope is doing 96 miles an hour, screaming and completely out of control, and people are falling over. Yes, it's a way of getting troops through the snow behind a snow cat vehicle. Yeah, so it's good fun. But you know, the ice can finish you off. The cold can finish you off. So you have to respect where you are. And British troops weren't very good at that. You know, we would go to somebody else's country and so mad dogs of an Englishman. You know. Go in the desert, most people lay down in the midday sun, and we've got patrols out getting sunstroke, you know. So we were a bit cocky, really.
Any other types of climate that you...
Well, the other time, so we've covered desert, desert, jungle, snow, and the other thing would be sort of mountain warfare, working in the mountains in China. Not a lot to say, I bumped into a... I was in China, and the whole of the new territories in China are encased in trillions and trillions and trillions and trillions of rolls of barbed wire to try and slow down any advance from the Chinese into the new territories and into sort of Kowloon and Hong Kong, that sort of area. So I worked there in the Chinese mountains, and men used to die on the march because, you know, you'd be marching through the night carrying 80 pound or so, and then you'd have to have achieved your goal during that night, because in the daytime you'd have to be hiding, So you moved at night, hide by day, you see. So yeah, men died. And a doctor might say to the colonel, you know, I would not be held responsible for how you're pushing these men. And the colonel will say to the doctor, you know, out of my bloody way, doctor. I've got 600 commandos, you know, that I'm responsible for.
How would they die?
Exhaustion. Yeah. Carrying heavy weapons crew would be carrying 3-inch mortars on their back and machine guns. One with the machine gun, then another guy would be carrying a base plate of a 3-inch mortar. The other guy would be carrying the barrel of a mortar, plus his personal equipment, plus his own weapon for self-protection. You know. So, yes, it was hard. We've had Gurkhas, and we used to run the Gurkhas into the deck. The Gurkhas used to fall out because they couldn't keep up. And these were boats that were used to working in the mountains. So you have to do, you know, it is. So we used to lay on the wire. Every hour we would have a 5-minute break. And then you would either lean forward on your rifle like that and put your head, well, you shouldn't have done, put your head on your rifle like that and stand like that with your pack on your back for 2 or 3 minutes.
On the butt of the rifle?
On the barrel. Yeah. So you go like that. You're not supposed to, but I mean, you'd hang over your rifle like that on the floor and you'd lean on your rifle like that. And then you do sort of 4 minutes of that every hour. Or the other one was a bit more relaxing, where you used to fall onto the barbed wire, because there's you wouldn't believe the amount of barbed wire everywhere you go. There's masses of barbed wire, so you just fall back on the barbed wire and you just like that, and you stay there for 4 minutes or so, and then the person in charge goes and it kicks hell out of your boots, get up, go on, and then you come to, and then you lean forward on your weapon, and then you off you go again, and you carry on and up and up, 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 up and over, and so people die. So what, you know? So it's unfortunate, but you're a commando, you know. You're not a counsellor. That's the life.
So what else about mountain warfare that's different?
It's hard. We worked, you know, we did have helicopters, so, you know, where the helicopters could help us, they would, of course, you know. But, you know, unlike the Yanks, they go everywhere and make one hell of a lot of noise, you know, with chattering helicopters. You know, we don't have that sort of thing, you know, in our forces. You know, the idea is not to let the enemy know that you're coming. And helicopters are noisy, so you have them a long way behind. So that was life in the New Territories.
I think you said you worked with the Americans at one stage.
Yes.
Training them in jungle warfare.
Yeah, I helped train the Americans in the jungle warfare school in Malaya. The word Loitokitok, I think that's East Africa. It might have been KL, Kuala Lumpur. Kotatinghi, Kuala Lumpur in Malaya. Jungle warfare school there. And so there are other people training, the Kiwis, the Maoris, helping to train the Yanks. Yeah, the Maoris are particularly good, of course, and the Aussies, and the Special Air Service. And so I was helping, amongst other people, to train the Americans for Vietnam. And I don't think we succeeded very well, because the Yanks are prone to making too much noise, whereas our forces, I'm proud to say, I think I might, I hope nobody's going to contradict me, that, you know, we train hard, so when it comes to the firefight, you know, we can handle it as best as we can, whereas the Yanks are inclined to take things easy. They move in their Pepsi Cola machines and donut making equipment and cinemas and make a lot of noise and leave a lot of litter about, leave a lot of food about. And I've actually eaten their rubbish they've actually left behind. Their tins of chicken land, chicken Maryland and chocolate biscuits have actually fed me, and I've been trying to train them. So they don't tend to dress for the jungle. They seem to think that they're on a movie in Spain and with John Wayne, so they didn't tend to dress a bit like cowboys, and they're very sloppy and noisy, and they're not really suitable for jungle warfare. In the jungle, you have to be silent. You don't speak. You have signs. And they're not very good on keeping quiet. And they seem to travel close together. You know, if you do that, then if a hand grenade goes off, it kills 4 men. Whereas if you're widely spaced, you know, if a grenade goes off, it takes out one person, and the others can sort out the problem. So, and I've also seen one of their training films, their parachute training films, and it's quite laughable. I don't mean to be disrespectful with the Yanks. I think they're smashing people, but when it comes to training and fighting. I think they ought to really employ more professional people to guide them. Yeah, because they're very sort of gung-ho and noisy. But they're nice people.